Everybody, welcome into the Dr. William Clark podcast. I am recording this and sharing this recording with you all. This was a small group session that we hosted, talking about nonprofit stuff as we always do, but specifically talking about volunteerism and how to expand the capacity of your volunteers within your organization. So as we jump into this particular recording, feel free to replay multiple times, share with your network and your colleagues, particularly if you know someone who's in this space where they're trying to figure out how to grow their organizations in a way that makes sense through volunteer support. So be sure to plug into this content. Lastly, if you want to get on my calendar, talk about your nonprofit organization, its goals, its fundraising approaches, and certainly talk about volunteers, you can go to drwilliampclark.com. Again, it's drwilliampclark.com and schedule your consultation, and we'll be glad to speak with you. And said, let's go ahead and jump into this podcast, and I'll see you guys on the other side. Secondly, we are recording the session just so we can share it with folks. Thirdly, I'm going to encourage you all to come off camera just so that I can see you all and kind of interact with you all, and I get a chance to meet some of the people we've been supporting and coaching all summer. I wanted to kind of take this time during this session to kind of talk about what it would look like to grow your volunteer base in the coming year. And the whole concept of this grant and ultimately what I hope for you guys and what I hope you have for yourself is that you're not only looking for repeat funding next year from the Unity grant, but you're looking for long-term funding and support from multiple sources, right? So you should be thinking about ways to expand your funding sources so that you can continue to do what you do, but so you can also continue to expand what you do to serve more individuals, serve more families, serve more members of the community. And as a part of that, it will be important to kind of look at how do you expand your volunteer base. As I'm talking and sharing just a couple of thoughts here, I'm going to encourage you to log any questions you may have about this topic here, utilizing the link I just put in the chat, and I'll be sure to answer them as they come in. But there are a couple of things I just want to speak to when it comes to volunteers. Number one, I want to make sure that we're all on the same page when I say that volunteers are not staff people. Okay, your volunteers are not staff people. They never will be. And I understand why some people think about it in those terms, and why they may use that language. But the reality is, volunteers are not staff people. And the reason we need to be clear about this is because volunteers do not have a funding obligation or a financial obligation to your organization. Volunteers have committed themselves to your work and to your organization because of the work, because of the organization, its mission, its purpose, and the customers that it ultimately is serving. But there isn't a contractual connection between you and these volunteers. The idea of volunteers can focus on members of your board who are our primary super volunteers. It can also trickle down to folks who help with the day-to-day of our programs from time to time. And maybe there's another category of support and service you engage in when it comes to volunteers. Regardless of the role a volunteer plays, it still remains the same that volunteers are not staff people. And so it becomes critical for us to kind of understand that because it changes the way we approach volunteerism and encourage volunteerism within an organization. It changes the way how we manage staff, how we manage resources, et cetera. So how do we grow our volunteer base? It's really important. And it seems as though the folks that are on this call and some of what you shared, you all seem to really have a solid a purpose, a solid mission, a solid understanding of what you do in the community. You seem to have a really solid presentation of your programs in the community. And that is very attractive to volunteers who are looking for these opportunities to connect with organizations that seem to have their stuff together. And so that is, I think, step one that all you all should receive kudos for. But another reason volunteers decide to plug into your organization is because of their connection to the outcomes you're driving towards, right? And these outcomes do not have to be geared towards volunteers at all, but these outcomes need to be super clear so that when a volunteer reads them, they understand why this work exists, they understand why there are staff members associated with this work, and they understand why they must commit themselves as a volunteer. A lot of times volunteers are looking at a mission connection when they're looking to donate their time and hopefully their resources to your organization. And that mission connection is an acknowledgement that the work of this organization speaks to me, speaks to my heart, it speaks to my mind, it speaks to my soul. And it is a great way for me as a member of the community to contribute something of value and substance back to a group of people who I believe can benefit from the work of this organization. The more you're able to clarify that and speak that language in a way that is easy for a volunteer to understand, easy for supporters to understand, you will see, I think, an uptick in the volunteer signups in your organization. Taking this a step further, it's going to be even equally important for you as an organization to be thoughtful about ways to recruit volunteers by way of showing up where they are. Now, given the changes that have taken place since COVID and how the rules of engagement have changed when it comes to employers, employees, working from home, et cetera, it has made it extremely, infinitely difficult to show up and be at an employer site to kind of recruit volunteers. However, it doesn't make it impossible. The question that we have to ask ourselves when it comes to identifying where our volunteers are is, where are they and how do we access them? It used to be that we can go to a large scale employer site in the center of Hartford or at the center of our state capital or any city and just say we can go there. And that's starting to show up a little bit more as folks are coming back to work. But there are other antidotes to this that we need to explore when we ask the simple question, where are our volunteers? Where do they spend time? Where do they spend the most time? So if you think that a lot of your volunteers are working from home, that could be true. Then you have to ask a series of subset questions to understand, where do they spend their time after work? Where do they spend their time on the weekends? Where do they spend their time during lunch hour? Where do they spend their time socially? And as you begin to identify where your potential target volunteers spend their time, then I think it puts you in a position to strategize ways to recruit them and to bring them on board to further support your work. This doesn't change the fact that they are not staff people, but we're trying to increase volunteerism support network for our work. The last thing I'll share with you, and then I'll check the chat for questions, is this idea of staff, right? And I think a lot of nonprofits are wrestling with, you know, how do we expand capacity if we can't rely on our volunteers? Some of you may have stories that, you know, reflects this struggle with volunteers when they sign up to do something, but they don't show up, or they don't follow through, or they start it, but they stop, or it's incomplete. And the need for that, the support of the volunteer and the work that they do doesn't change, but their commitment may change. And so you're looking at your balance sheet, you're looking at the cash in the bank, you're looking at the size of the grants you're getting, and you're asking yourself, how do we still do this work and still have the impact we desire? One of the things I will encourage you to think about, depending on the size of your organization and the maturity of the organization in terms of years in business, is to think about ways to bring on per diem staff or part-time staff. This is something that should be explored further if it's possible within your organization. Why do we need to look at per diem staff, 1099 staff, part-time staff? It's because these staff members who are not committed to the organization full-time will ultimately have a connection to the organization that is contractual and financial based, all right? And when that connection is established and these persons determine that they're making this commitment in exchange for some sort of compensation, it puts them in a position to be much more committed to the work than your volunteers will be. They will show up much more frequently. They will not ghost you as frequently as your volunteers will. A lot of folks are looking for part-time work, particularly in these inflationary periods and times that we're living in. And some folks really do not want to go to Uber. They really don't want to work a part-time job at Stop and Shop or at their local CVS, et cetera, but they would love an opportunity to do work that is fulfilling, that allows them to give back, but also that compensates them at a pretty nice clip. And if you think about from a budgetary standpoint, ways to compensate per diem staff at a higher hourly rate than you would part-time staff, because their hours are concentrated, they're focused on a limited number of hours for a targeted specific amount of work, you will notice that one, you'll be saving a lot more money. Number two, you'll be getting higher quality of work. And number three, you'll be getting a higher caliber of team members who are part of the work. When you look at the combination of increasing your, diversifying the strategies related to finding volunteers, as well as expanding staff capacity by bringing on per diem and part-time staff and 1099 staff, you might notice an uptick in the outputs that you're able to produce within your organization. You might notice a greater impact on the youth or the families you're serving. You might notice greater innovation and creativity in the work that you're producing. You might notice that you're qualifying for more grants because the work and the production that you're engaged in is at a much higher level than it is with your current staffing structure. With that being said, I do want to pause for a moment. I do want to invite you all to, if you want to leave your question or comment via the form I left in the chat, to do so, or you can come off mute, ask your questions, or share your thoughts about this topic for today.
I can go and like share like some of my experience with like volunteers. Yeah. Since we've been a program that's existed for many years now, we do have a pretty good core volunteer base. Like all of our coaches are volunteers, have been volunteers and everything. You know, we have some dedicated parents to the program. But at the same time, we do struggle with the consistency for some. So as we have expanded into these grant programs and been able to offer a little bit of compensation to some of the people, it has helped with a little bit more consistency. Not saying it's solved the problem 100%, but it has helped. And I think some of it also for us, our benefit is having a good core group where we have the repeat parents and, you know, putting multiple kids through our program. So that has been a benefit for us. I know everybody's programs are structured differently. And the cycle of kids and is different. So our kids can cycle through from, for the most part, age 7 to about 14. We are working and expanding things to also keep high school kids included. So kids that have kind of transitioned from the program and are high school players, but still making sure they're tapped into us. So, you know, we have many years we can spend with the family if they stay engaged with our program. So that's been a benefit for us and has helped us. So being able to, you know, compensate some of the volunteers has helped with the consistency, and it helps for the kids to see the consistent faces and helping out.
Yeah, Winter, that's really good feedback. When you say earlier that you have a pretty committed and sizable volunteer base, how do we define it? How do you define that?
By the ones that repeat and come back.
okay.
Literally, it's that. You know, a lot of people stay in the program. We, you know, myself included, my kids started in the program when they were, my oldest son started when he was about 7. My oldest son now is 26. So I'm still involved. Like, I don't have any kids involved in the program. So we have a good group of people the same way, where their kids have transitioned, but they still participate and help out. So that helps. You know, we have coaches that have helped in different capacities, whether they've, you know, maintained a head coach or stepped down to a different position. But we do have some, you know, some may have to take a year off for, you know, personal family reasons, but they come back. So, you know, we have a good solid group. You know, again, we do transition for some people, but it's just, we try to keep them engaged and talking to them throughout the year. You know, also, like I said, trying to expand on different programming to make it more a year-long program instead of just kind of football season. So this grant has helped us to do that, to get that vision going. So it helps in keeping everybody engaged.
Now, one more question for you. When we talk about commitment of the volunteers, you mentioned that you measure commitment by year-to-year renewals of the same volunteers. What about week-to-week during a program period? What's that commitment level like?
I don't have a number in front of me to say what the percentage is. I mean, I know, like, you know, everybody week-to-week isn't the same, you know, and again, because of the time commitment our program takes, we do understand it's hard sometimes each week for somebody to be there 100% of the time. And I look at it, even this is outside of the grant, kind of when our grant, this grant kicks in for our program. So football season for us is a very heavy time commitment because, you know, once it really gets the thick of it, there's practice pretty much every day, games on one of the days on the weekend. So that takes up hours of somebody's time. And, you know, we're asking people to do this, you know, understanding people still have their own full-time jobs, their own families that they have to contend with. So, you know, while we would love everybody to have the 100%, we know that is not always possible. So we do have, you know, like I'm looking now kind of even outside of the program, really like football season, because that's where the bulk of our hours come. We do have, you know, each team has a certain amount of coaches that they have with them. So if somebody's not there, there's still a balance. There's still somebody there to fit in. So we do look at it in terms of, at least I'd say, probably really never put a figure to paper on this, but you know, it's noticeable maybe if somebody's not there 75% of the time. Then it's, you know, we can ask questions of, you know, is everything okay? Are you sure this is the right role for you? And maybe adjusting people's roles if needed, if they have contending things with family and work obligations. So we keep an eye on it. You know, it's easier, like now flipping into the Unity Grant program. We do that a couple times a week. That one doesn't necessarily have the weekend commitment. So I know that's helpful for parents. But again, you know, people have to work, families. So we understand that there's times people may be missing.
Yeah, I think what you shared is very accurate and consistent across several organizations, right? The year-to-year commitment where people start off well and strong and say, yeah, I'm here, is pretty consistent, which I do think others might agree with. But when you start to look at the week-to-week commitment, the multiple days a week commitment, it starts to get a little shaky for reasons you outlined. And most organizations do not consider the fact that volunteers have life happening to them just as much as staff does. The key difference is when you have paid staff is that they are more likely to show up and continue to work through their life issues, as opposed to a volunteer who has the option to ghost you and prioritize life over a volunteer commitment. And that leaves the organization in a tight situation where you can't really force a person. You don't have any leverage over a person. You can't really guilt a person into coming in. You can only hope that there's nothing tough happening this week, or if they do have to, you know, call out, that there's an influx of other volunteers to show up this week. And this kind of speaks to something you mentioned earlier, and what we're looking to encourage you guys to think about is, how do you increase the number of people on staff who are receiving some sort of compensation in a consistent way to have that show up rate increase, to have that week-to-week commitment increase, so that all of that pressure doesn't fall squarely on your shoulders or the shoulders of a select few?
Yeah, we've actually did build that in to try to, right, look at it this year again to see the differences of last year's programming, to see what that looks like. You know, each year is different. Like, you know, everybody has challenges outside of work. I mean, I understand that even from my main job perspective, it's, you know, life happens for everybody. And, you know, it's in trying to be sensitive of that, you know, especially right now. It's just trying to be sensitive of that and supportive of people when they need it.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. Other thoughts, reflections, and questions about this topic? We're talking about volunteers, building a volunteer base, and expanding your staff capacity through per diem and part-time staff. Questions, reflections?
I think one of the things that maybe an unexpected benefit for us was that the volunteers, where we think that it's maybe one-sided isn't the word. I think personally, I can speak for myself, sometimes underestimate what those volunteers can bring to the table. Recently, I had a conversation with one of our volunteers, and they work for a larger company. And they said, hey, you know what? We had such a good time volunteering for your, you know, for our organization that I'm going to bring this back to our company. And not only do we now have an additional pool of potential volunteers, but some opportunities for additional funding and programming that, again, I never necessarily would have had an idea about. So it's kind of opened up some doors for us in some ways that we didn't initially think about or contemplate.
Love that. Richard, if you can stay off mute for a moment, you shared two critical things. What I heard you say is that, you know, there was a volunteer or a core group of volunteers that led to multiple volunteers coming. So we'd love to hear more about that. And then would love for you to go deeper into funding opportunities that came from that connection. So if you could just take us a little bit deeper there.
Sure, actually, and I have two things to share. One is, I think pretty, pretty big for me personally. So, and I'll share this one. So we do a couple of things. One of the things that we do as far as programming is we offer a food pantry. And we stock a food pantry, and it's to anyone in the greater Hartford area, really anyone who has a need. We're registered with 211, and so we're getting calls from, you know, folks all over the place if they have a need, you know, for food items. So about 2 years ago, we had a family come in, and we were able to serve their need at the time for food. And fast forward last year, we had an event and sought some volunteers. And one of the volunteers came in, and they were, and afterwards, after our event, they pulled me aside and said, I was one of the people you helped a year and a half ago. And it blew me away because we had engaged with an organization for volunteers. They provided volunteers. It just so happened that one of those volunteers was someone that we actually personally helped through our food pantry, and they were so appreciative. So we already had an immediate in with her, and were able to engage her very quickly. And she in turn, again, brought in, you know, shared her story with a few others and really encouraged that partnership. From the same organization, we had some additional volunteers, and they shared the story, and they were able to actually use one of their internal ERG groups to spread the word, spread the message, encourage more volunteers. And now this, our event, is one of their volunteer opportunities that's on their calendar each year. And in addition to that, again, one of their internal programs in terms of, you know, potential funding is our event and our organization. So again, never would have foreseen that necessarily. Certainly wasn't part of my planning. But, you know, here it is, just through open up the doors to our volunteers, you know, we were able to certainly, you know, engage with them on a level that we probably didn't, you know, previously anticipate.
Yeah, I think you just shared this amazing story that I'm not sure a lot of folks realize is really accessible to them, that there are different ways to deploy your volunteers to get more of what you need. I think going back to Winter's point, right, that the week-to-week commitment can be really, really tough for people, really, really tough, especially with people who have families with small children or children of a certain age. But when you're able to expand your base by asking your core volunteers, at least the ones who are faithful, the ones who really like your organization, to say, hey, can you recommend 5 to 10 people we can contact to add to our volunteer chat group? so that when a need is here, we can have a greater base. That's going to be helpful. And to your point, one of my favorite strategies of raising money is what you just shared, which is these volunteers are employees at, you know, large scale companies that may have community investment departments, employee directed pre-tax investments. They may have a private small foundation associated with these corporations. And these foundations are looking for recommendations for how to invest their community dollars. And if you can make an impression on the right volunteer, that referral can lead to a grant application or direct referral that, as you mentioned, Richard, just was not available to you, didn't think about it. And it really can open up so many, many other doors for you. That was a great, great story. Heather, any thoughts or reflections about today's topic?
I don't deal directly with volunteers in my role at camp. We have another staff person who does that, but I will say that, you know, when COVID was at its peak and many corporate volunteer groups were not allowed to come out, that really impacted our budget in terms of how much we had to pay for external help, especially with landscaping and setting up with events and things like that. So from that perspective, I think that it's been an eye-opener for us in terms of volunteer engagement. So it was nice to have volunteer groups back out this year. And then we have a few volunteers who've been really great this year in connecting us with third-party events. So we were the recipient of the Johnny's Jog. We were one of the five charities picked this year to be a recipient of those funds. So that was, you know, $20,000 surprise that we hadn't budgeted for, which is great. And that just came about because of a volunteer who was part of that event and was able to put our name forward. And it's a great way for us to be out in the community too. So so that those are kind of been some of our highlights of volunteers for at least this past year.
Love it. Love it. Great feedback. Kenio, what are your thoughts, reflections, questions about this topic?
I think it's extremely helpful. We've faced a lot of the challenges that a lot of other organizations have faced in terms of the consistencies with volunteers. For us, we're relatively new, so it's even more challenging. And we started in the peak of, you know, during COVID. So you can only imagine some of the challenges that we have faced. But to be perfectly honest, it's getting a lot better. So we're looking forward to working with new community partners and hopefully getting a lot more dedicated volunteers.
All right. Thank you. Zoe, what are your reflections and questions about this topic? All right. Zoe going once, going twice. Feel free to flash. There you go.
Hi. Sorry.
It's all right.
Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question?
Yeah. What are your thoughts and reflections about today's topic?
I've been taking it in a lot because
Zoe, I don't know if we lost you.
Kind of promoting engagement has been through both the options of like on our website, there's a sign up and people can either indicate that they're signing up as, you know, like a parent for their family, or if they're interested in just like generally volunteering, because we have a garden that requires additional support, just because, especially in this heat wave, even watering all the time is something that, you know, is useful if we have volunteers. Listen to kind of other
Zoe, it looks like we lost you there. If you get better reception, feel free to flash a mic or leave your questions or reflections in the chat. I think you were sharing some good stuff, but I think we just lost you there. Trita, what about you? I know you submitted a question via the survey tool, but feel free to come off mute, ask your question, and share your reflection.
Yes. Hi, everybody. Forgive me. I couldn't find my phone, so I didn't have time to change. I used my time, so excuse my attire. But I wanted to just share that consistency of engagement and also this idea of expiration date. Like, when do you, you know, do you ever exhaust the people supporting you? I also have a new term of partnering. Through partnering with organizations, we have more and more people wanting to be involved, helping us spread the word. And so how do you sort of determine what way do you get the most of the people who are interested in your specific mission? And how do you hold on to that, right? And grow that without, you know, I don't want to say taking advantage of it, but you know, asking too much, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I think you asked, you brought up three different questions. Do you want to spend time on each of those? You asked about an expiration date for volunteer commitment. I'm not sure the full scope of that question, but I think the inference of it is makes a lot of sense, in that it might be healthy to set an expiration date for your volunteers from this perspective. And the perspective is, you want to give your volunteers something to look forward to. If you have an open-ended approach to volunteerism with no particular goal in mind, no outcome in mind, and no end date in mind, it can seem very daunting, challenging, and just downright exhausting if you are a volunteer that can't cross the finish line, or you won't ever satisfy something or accomplish something on behalf of the organization, specifically if you're giving of your time. The only time you typically see that type of consistency in end date, time frame, commitment, milestone is when you see volunteer board members who join the board for a 2 to 3 year term. They already know we meet 5-6 times a year. Then I have to give my board financial commitment, and then I'm only on the board for the next 2 to 3 years, and then I can roll off or decide to renew. When it comes to day-to-day volunteers, volunteers who are supporting our daily operations, you don't see that as often. And so it could be helpful if you want to maximize volunteer commitment, volunteer relationships, is to make volunteerism project-centered, that has a start and an end date that doesn't go beyond a certain period of time. What that period of time is, I don't know. I'm not confident it should be a year long, unless it's like a year long, you know, service project, but you might want to look at something that is shorter, that can give people a sense of where we're going to start here and we're going to end in 3 months. And we're going to focus on doing X, Y, and Z. And here are our milestones in addition to the end date. It's very similar to Winter's example, where hers is seasonal. Yeah, the football season, that's for kids, probably a 2 to 3 month commitment. And even with that, it can become very difficult because you have games week to week, you have special games, playoffs, championships, et cetera, et cetera. And so that in her world may be long-term, Trita, right? That 3 month is a long-term commitment for that type of work. But for what you do, 3 months may just be right, because you only meet with folks once every 2 weeks. You only have to accomplish 3 goals, and then it's going to end on November 1st, right? So that's something to think about. And to negotiate with volunteers and to measure if it's working. You also brought up partnering, which is another way to backfill needs in your organization. The caveat I will share with you when it comes to partnering is that partnerships should be consistent with what you, how you would make decisions with hiring staff. You should only partner with organizations that have, that meet the requisite skill, have the capacity, have the interest, have the cultural alignment, et cetera, with your organization. If you're partnering for partnering's sake, it's going to lead to a disaster that ultimately leads you frustrated, the other group frustrated, communication lines crossed, And then ultimately the group that suffers the most are the students, the kids, our customers. And so you want to be very intentional about who you decide to partner, go through several interview processes to kind of make sure you're identifying the right group to partner with. And then you brought up lastly, you know, how do you identify folks that are who are most interested in your vision? We shared earlier the importance of just communicating clearly and simply, that if somebody's reading your vision, your mission, your purpose for the first time, they should be able to understand what they're getting themselves into. If they have to ask 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 follow-up questions to get clarity on what you're offering, what you're doing, and where they can commit to, then it's a sign that you might want to rethink how you're articulating yourself publicly on written, printed materials, etc. People tend to connect with visions that align with how they view the world, how they choose to live their lives, and where they're looking to go or the problem they're looking to solve. So the best way to kind of find those folks who are committed is to continue to put yourself out there, put the organization out there, and let the mission and the vision and its purposes communicate on by itself, but it has to make sense to the ears of the people you're trying to attract. So the question you got to think about is, who's the person I'm trying to attract? What's that avatar look like? Who are these people? What are they trying to accomplish? What do they do for a living? And then how do I communicate in a way that captures their attention and brings them to our doorstep? Does that help?
It more than helps. I feel like I owe you a fee. Thank you.
My bill will be in the email shortly. Any other reflections, Trita?
You know, overall, I, like many people, trying to figure out how to reach our young people, in my case, girls, their families, wonderful volunteers, wonderful people that want to give and support an organization. And then there, this idea of generational gaps. And I've been, I'm going on a listening tour after Dr. Clark being in your presence over the summer. I'm going on a listening tour to high schools, youth churches, and I have some other organizations that are being willing to allow me to just come through and hear, especially what high school girls, mostly from Hartford, need. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. That is going to be huge. And cool. So we'll take care of that. So with that being said, y'all, this has been super helpful. I hope that you guys got something out of today's conversation. I hope that you learned something, not only from the few points that I shared, but also from the anecdotes, the stories that were shared. Winter, Richard, Heather, Kenio, Zoe, Trita, Terry, you guys share some really cool stories, questions that I think are worth talking about and replaying over and over again, because it leads to all of us kind of upskilling and strengthening our organizations. All right. So thanks for hanging out with us for this particular podcast. I do hope that this was helpful, particularly as we talked about volunteers, and perhaps you might have heard some sort of version of what's going on in your organization during this talk, and how your organization is currently handling volunteers. And maybe you want to switch it up and change gears because your organization is going through a shift, or your customers are really demanding something different. If you want to speak with us about your volunteer structure, or to talk about fundraising, or any other topic relative to your nonprofit organization, visit us at drwilliampclark.com, where you can schedule a free consultation. We'll be glad to speak with you. Again, it's drwilliampclark.com. And with that being said, guys, we'll see you next time. And this is Dr. William Clark for the Dr. William Clark Podcast. See everybody.